Welcome to Podcast Insider. I'm your host this week, Mike Dell, and I have Angelo Mondato, or Dado. Jeez, I can't pronounce your name right. How you doing, Angelo?
Yeah, it's just like potato or potato, so Mondato or Mondato works.
Very good.
I'm doing good. It's not raining today, so great day.
Yeah, that's always a bonus. Angelo's our Chief Information Officer and one of the co-founders of Blueberry and Raw Voice, so we're going to talk a little more about him in the Meet the Team segment. But today we got some news, we got a best practice, we got some blueberry stuff going on, and of course we got the question of the week. Let's get started on the news. Apple's new subscription service for podcasts is out. There's an article over on The Verge, but basically iOS 14.6 now has those in there. There's not a lot of them there yet. I was looking for them just to see what they look like, and I didn't see a whole bunch of them, and it's mostly the big players. But what do you think? Do you think that's going to be successful with their subscription thing, Angelo?
Yeah, time will tell, but a lot of people tried it independently. I think if they launched it 5 years ago when they still had a much larger market share, it would make a bigger impact. But now is better than never.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of other places doing it. Spotify's doing it or is planning on it. And there's a lot of people that are doing it independently. Of course, with PowerPress, you can do something similar to that with a third-party membership software or plug-in. So
Patreon's the one that always stands out. And it'll be interesting to see how many people uptake and actually keep with it. We saw a lot of podcasts try Patreon, and then a year later, I haven't seen a podcast get excited about setting up Patreon in years.
Right. Yeah, there's quite a few out there still doing it, but a lot of those are YouTubers and other things that are also doing Patreon, but there's a few. And I do believe Patreon has their own, you can in big air quotes say podcast, but really it's just a audio show that is, delivered through Patreon alone. And nothing wrong with that, I guess. And like I said, good luck to Apple and those who try that. As Todd and I were talking about, when they first announced this, the thing is, be careful what you commit to, because, if you're going to do a weekly show and there's people paying you, then all of a sudden you can't do a weekly show or you don't have the time for it or whatever, that could be something. Just remember, you committed to it, so you got to do it. So the other thing, this isn't really a story. There's no really link to it, but we've noticed that Apple has changed how you subscribe or follow a podcast now inside of the Apple Podcasts app. And it used to be that it was a direct subscription to the RSS feed. So when you put out your episode, it would go to your subscribers, the next time their phone checked the feed. You didn't have to wait until Apple updated your listing on the Apple directory. And now it seems that you have to wait until Apple pulls your feed into their directory before the episode is delivered to your subscribers, which could cause, several hour delays. If you're used to the thing being available immediately, it's not anymore on Apple Podcasts. So, I don't know. That's a fundamental change, and it doesn't seem like a lot of people are talking about it.
Well, isn't it a hybrid? I mean, you can still directly subscribe to a feed, and then it's not in Google Cloud.
Well, or Apple. But yeah, you can directly subscribe to a feed, and I've done that. And still, when you put out an episode, it's still Apple has to pull it first before it'll get delivered to your app, regardless of whether it's in their directory or not. At least
I don't want to do testing on that, because on some of them, especially where they're password protected, that means Apple would have a copy of the password protected URL.
Yeah, it's possible. Like I said, I don't know. We haven't done enough testing on it, but it certainly seems like there's a lot more delay now between the time you publish. When I publish my episodes, or when we publish the episode for this show, I'm subscribed to it on Apple Podcasts just to make sure everything's working. And, it used to be as soon as it was published and I hit refresh, it came in. And now, I have to wait several hours before I get my own episodes in Apple anyway.
Well, they're trying to strike a good balance, right? Because before, a show that has maybe 50,000 subscribers, your feed would get hit, up to 50,000 times an hour because people opening up their podcast app.
Oh, yeah, it could be an advantage to, people that have that issue. So, you know, there's good and bad in it for sure. But, you know, the expectations of a lot of podcasters are that, well, I publish it at 9 o'clock. It should be there at 9:05. And, you know, it's just not the way it is anymore. And, you know, us in support get that kind of question all the time. And especially since they made this update. So I don't know. It's a fundamental change in the way it works. And, you know, like I said, we don't know for sure. So we'll have to do some testing around that. But I am subscribed to a show that is not listed in the Apple Podcast directory. And I know when they publish that show, and I know it's, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours before I actually get it, even though that show is not in the directory at Apple. So I don't know. We'll see. So something that might help solve that is things like the next thing we're going to talk about, Podping. It's similar to WebSub and the old Ping service that Apple used to run. And it's another initiative of the Podcast Index people. And it looks like it has some potential to help in certain cases. But as you and I were talking about before the show, it also seems like unless the big guys pick it up, how useful is it going to be? And, you know, how much effort do we want to put into it?
Yeah, because, you know, when you think about it, there was already a ping protocol that dates back to like 2001, 2003 that was used for writing pages and letting other sites know. I'm trying to remember what that service was called. And it's still around. And actually, if you use our PowerPress plugin, you can go into tools and you can click a button and it adds those ping services to your PowerPress site. And they don't require you to have an account or password. It's pretty privacy geared, way ahead of its time when you think about it that way. And then WebSub came, which is great because it solved the issue where we wanted to distribute the updates in a way that only the people that wanted to get notified would get it, and then they would redistribute those notifications. WebSub's perfect for that. This Podping is just another version of the older style ping, and it doesn't have, at least from when I was looking at the documentation, a way of redistributing the updates like WebSub does. So it's a step backwards. Obviously, it helps that whole initiative with Podcast Index and helps build their business empire. But I don't know if it really helps all podcasters. It's just another layer in the onion.
What its idea was that a lot of these directories and apps and stuff take a long time to update. And a lot of podcasters, you know, as we were talking about with Apple's changes, a lot of podcasters want instant gratification when they, you know, update their RSS feed. They want it everywhere right now. And this is just another possible way that it could update quicker, I guess. You know, like WebSub's pretty slick. I know, you know, we have it in PowerPress. And if you're subscribed to your own show on Google Podcasts or any of your subscribers on Google Podcasts, that listing updates within, you know, a couple of minutes at the most, you know, once you do that. And the Blueberry directory does that as well. So it's pretty slick. And, you know, I don't know what the advantages or disadvantages of this new thing will be. But it's, you know, somebody's doing something. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it's got buzzwords like it's using blockchain and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, true. And there's really a cool thing here. I'll have a link to it in the show notes called Podping Watcher. But basically, you can watch in real time as shows update. So I don't know. It's just fun to waste time watching, I guess. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Some hosting companies and directories and apps have adopted Podping. And, you know, it's just at the beginning stages. So we'll see what it turns into. And speaking of Google Podcasts, they're revamping their app for usability. And I didn't really dig too deep into this article, but it's good to see that Google's, you know, taking podcasting seriously. And what is this, like the third or fourth attempt at it?
Well, attempt is a strong word. This is their second podcasting app, but I think this is going to be their third version. And I will say that the first version was actually quite accessible and simple. And I wonder what happened in the last major update. Did they miss some just putting the right attributes and tags on things? And then that's why now it's got accessibility issues. But I think they went the opposite direction. I think the last version was what they call a progressive web app. And then I think they did a rewrite within its own app. So I think now they might have jumped the gun on some of the changes they made. So now they got to go back and make it accessible again.
One thing they did add that was good in the last version of Google Podcasts was the ability to subscribe to a feed directly, like Apple took out. Well, didn't take it out, but changed. this one, you can just, you know, if you have an RSS feed, you can drop an RSS feed in it. Before, it had to be already spidered or found by Google Podcasts.
Right. And I suspect that's why they probably redeveloped it as an app, because you can't really do that with a progressive web app, because it's meant to work with a server.
Mm-hmm.
Infrastructure, I should say.
Right. You know, those progressive web apps are pretty cool. You know, we've got it for our PIP product, and, you know, some of the new apps out there, PodFriend comes to mind. They're a progressive web app, as well as some native apps. You know, he's really developing a lot of different versions of that. But a cool one was the web app. And, you know, I actually use that when I'm working sometimes. I'll bring up PodFriend and start a podcast in the background and whatever. You know, it's, I guess, not a whole lot different than going to the webpage for the podcast. But hey, you know, sometimes you just got to play with the technology. But good to see Apple or Google is continuing to make improvements. And we were talking before the show again about some private feed stuff, and even, you know, that first story with Apple getting their thing going. Podcast Index also has another project. There's a project called Podcast Feed Blocklist. And that's where apparently you'll be able to, I don't know how it's going to work exactly. It's just starting, but they're going to have a list of private feeds that if the directory in question or the app in question subscribes to that, that'll block that private feed from getting into directories and apps. I guess I don't understand it. You know, I told you before we started here, this is going to be a little geekier than normal since Angelo's here. And this is the second GitHub link I've got in the news section. That's kind of weird.
That's what happens when you bring a computer scientist, I guess, to the meeting.
There you go.
But just to explain, most podcasters aren't going to care about this, but yeah, what they're trying to do is create an index. And actually, I'm looking at it now. It's not a full list. It's just regular expressions. So again, way over most folks' heads. But they're just saying, hey, what's the URL that we should never index as a podcast that's public? And that's all they're doing. This is mainly for developers.
Right. Yeah. A lot of this stuff is just for, you know, app developers and directory developers and that kind of thing. But it's interesting even to us normal podcasters. So there's a little story, last one on the news list here. It says, welcome to the machines. Are synthetic voices the next frontier in podcasting? And what I gathered from the article is there's some service or some software they're working on right now that will make a synthetic version of your voice so that you can just type stuff and it'll put it out as audio. It's kind of cool. There's one that I use once in a while that does that, where you just type stuff in and it reads it out, and it's got an AI voice, so it's a pretty decent voice. But this one looks like, you know, it says end-to-end voice as a service, or VAAS. So hyper-realistic synthetic voices, and I guess a lot of radio stations use that now for liners and announcements and stuff, and they're trying to bring that to podcasting. I guess that's what I got out of the story.
Yeah, you know, I'm always concerned with this stuff, but they're getting people's voices. I remember hearing an example of the last two presidents, Trump and Obama, and unless you really, really listened to it, you would have thought they were speaking. So it's a little creepy, and actually, I wonder how they're going to detect. I mean, they're doing it now with photos, the deep fake photo detecting, how they're going to detect when it's a synthetic audio versus the real.
Right. Well, they do it with video as well. I saw a demonstration. I think it was a TED Talk or something. It was a demonstration from Adobe where they had a video of somebody, and they could go in and, you know, there was a transcript, and you just edit the transcript, and the video and the voice would follow the transcript, and it was really hard to tell, you know. So it was that's how a lot of those deep fakes come up. So, you know, suffice it to say, you can't believe what you hear or what you see anymore. You know, since Photoshop, you know, photos are pretty much useless as far as proof of anything. And this, you know, probably the same thing, but yeah, we'll see. See if it gets to podcasting or not. Let's get on to our best practice. We've covered this kind of before, but I wanted to get Angelo's take on it. You know, keeping your website up to date. A lot of WordPress sites, you know, when I do one-on-one calls with customers and we go into their WordPress site and they've got, you know, 27 plugins that need updates and they're two versions back on WordPress and they just don't update things. Or they've got 20 or 30 plugins that are deactivated and they don't use but still on the site. And my theory is, let's try to keep that as cleaned up and up to date as possible. And the way I always explain it is, a lot of hackers will, hackers, I guess that's a weird term, but a lot of people that want to do nefarious things to your website will see that, oh, this real popular plugin just updated. You know, what did they update? And if it was a security flaw that they updated for, then they go around looking for websites that have that plugin that hasn't been updated yet. And then that may give them an in to hack your website. So I don't know. Is that too simple, Angelo, of an explanation?
I mean, that's pretty much it is. I mean, it's not like hackers are sitting there looking for vulnerabilities in everything that comes out, but they'll watch the big ones. Like any WordPress plugin that has maybe 100,000 users or more, they know, like, hey, if there's a serious vulnerability, we need to jump on this and we can hack some computers. And not all hacks have to do with like trying to get into your website and, you know, see your passwords and stuff. Sometimes they just want access because then they're going to put other pages on your site to help rank an SEO target, for example.
Yeah, that's like with the comment spam. You know, their goal is to get you to get that public so that they have links back to something.
But, you know, depending on what it is, what the security issue is, it could be really major where they get access to the whole machine. Most cases, it's usually they're what they call cross-site server scripting or scripting type vulnerabilities. And they're, in my opinion, they're minor. They'd have to be actually targeting you as you sign in order to be able to access your account. But all those things are possible. So it's just good to keep everything up to date. Or, and you mentioned it here, if you have plugins or themes in your site and you don't use them and you're never using them in the future, just delete them. Because even if they're not activated, it's still code that's just sitting there that if someone could just as easily, if they're targeting you, send you a link that you could inadvertently click and it could activate the plugin because you're already logged in your site. It's just not worth even that kind of risk. So it's just good practice. Just get rid of the stuff if you're not using it.
Right. Yeah, I had one. It was weird. I was on, this was several years ago, but on a GoDaddy hosted WordPress site. Not that GoDaddy had anything to do with it, but it was a WordPress site. And what happened was somehow they, and the word hack, is hack a good word? I don't know. But somebody got in there and somehow changed my htaccess file to block the Google search bot. So my site just absolutely dropped off the planet when it come to Google search. And I don't know, you know, who or what or why they would want to do that, but that was a weird one. And I never did figure out how they got in there, but I'm assuming I probably just left something unupdated or who knows. But anyway, but yeah, just keep it clean. And, you know, and the other thing about keeping it clean is it keeps it simpler. You know, WordPress is sort of complicated to those that aren't, you know, used to that kind of thing. And the more things that are in there that you're not using, you know, just the more complicated it seems. You know, isn't it always better, you know, you clean up your office and don't you seem more productive when you have a clean office? It's the same thing for the WordPress site. Anything to add there, Angelo?
Yeah, you're reminding me I need to clean my office.
That wasn't so bad the last time I was there a year and a half ago.
my home office. Yeah. The office is looking good.
Good. All right. So with that, just like I said, keep everything as simple and as, you know, cleaned up as possible and make sure you do those updates. I try to do my updates like once a week at least, you know, or if I'm in there for something else and I see the little red indicator, you know, go ahead and update. You know, chances are, you know, you're not going to cause any trouble. Seriously, it's very rare that an update will cause any trouble. And if it does, we can fix it. Blueberry News. I'm going to be a little self-promoting here. I've got two webinars on June 2nd, one for category podcasting in WordPress and one for podcast channels in WordPress. And, you know, along with showing you how to set it up and what it's used for, I'm going to make it so you can decide if you're going to do multiple shows from your WordPress site, whether you want to use categories or podcast channels. You really don't want to use both. In fact, it's probably bad practice to use both. Isn't that right, Angelo?
It'll certainly make things a lot more complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, we're going to have those two links right there on the show notes at podcastinsider.com. If you want to sign up, even if you don't attend, you can sign up and we'll send you a video afterwards. And, you know, I kind of wanted to do this for a while because a lot of people will assume that they want to add a show to their site, so they add a category feed. Well, the problem with that is their main feed is a channel, and everything in every category goes into that main channel. So that doesn't really work, because then your main podcast has both shows in it. And that may be an advantage depending on what you're doing. So we'll talk that out in these two webinars, and go ahead and sign up for those, and we'll see you then. It's on June 2nd. Let's see, categories at 1 and channels at 2 p.m. Eastern. And let's see, we had an article over on Podcast Insider, a new writer to us, Meryl Klimau. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but she's a podcast writer and a guest booker and co-host of a couple of shows. And so go read her article about the 4 easy and mostly free ways to spice up your podcast. So if you want to write for Podcast Insider, you can email marketing@blueberry.com. So anything else going on in Blueberry, Angelo, that we can talk about?
No, everything right now is very top secret.
Yep, top secret, yes. We could tell you, but then we'd have to shoot you. All right. So I've been doing these Meet the Team interviews. I've got a whole bunch of them recorded now. And since I conned you into co-hosting with me today, I'm also going to con you into doing your Meet the Team. I know you've been on the show before. And of course, Todd and I talk about you a lot. Your ears probably ring sometimes. But why don't we go over a little bit of how you got into podcasting and how you got into helping start Raw Voice.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those interesting stories, but I'm not the best at telling it. But basically, Todd put a call out in his show, and one of my other friends and colleagues was listening and said, hey, we need a developer to get involved. This was in like March, April of 2005. Yeah, you can't even say 20 when you say that. And basically, I'm like, no, I'm not interested. But then he, you know, did the Easter eggs. He started sending me links to actual podcasts. And he's like, check this show out. Check that show out. And, you know, after he listened to a couple developer shows, and to just give you an idea how this totally fit with me, but I didn't get it the first time, I was taking shows that were streaming with Shoutcast and then re-recording them as MP3s and then throwing it on my MP3 player and listening to them when I travel. So I'm like, wait a minute, this is already half the steps I was doing already there. I can just download the MP3 and put it on my Sansa, if you guys remember those things. Yeah. And so after a few weeks and checking out all these shows that he was sending me, I only really liked one of them, but that's, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings, but I totally got it. I'm like,
well, not all shows are for everybody.
Right. But I totally got what podcasting was at that point. And then he's like, we got to go to the next meeting. So I think in May, I finally started getting involved. And then that's when the rumor that Apple might put podcasting in the iTunes app. And then by late June, early July, Apple launched. We were like already starting to code stuff. And it kind of went off from there. I mean, we had the company founded that August. And we went to the first conference in that November in Ontario, California, and the rest has been history.
Yeah, we've been, you know, I think I got involved not too far after that, but at least hanging around you guys. So you're now the chief information officer, kind of in charge of development and other things like that. It certainly has changed over the years. You know, when I first started, about 12 years ago, working with you guys, you know, it was just you in an office in Columbus. I think you were sharing an office with a realtor or something. I forget what it was. Where was that first office?
HVAC company.
Oh, and there we go.
Yes. So it was on this side of Columbus, on the north side, really close to the Budweiser plant.
It could be handy.
Well, no, they didn't give tours at this one. But yeah, it would have been kind of cool to go over there. But it was a right place at the right time. We were in a good office space so we could get good internet for the office. And we had access to a conference room when we needed it. And it just helped us kind of grow. That time frame was when we really took like an evolution on how we were doing everything development wise. Before then, we were doing it in a traditional sense, like a few of our competitors still do, where we just have servers on racks and lease them. We're one of the first companies to migrate everything over to the cloud, as they call it now. But 2007, we were already using like Amazon Web Services just for storage because we had hundreds of thousands of MP3s we needed to store somewhere, and it just made logical sense. And then we just kind of evolved as Amazon Web Services evolved, and everything moved over there. And it really put us in a different position with our competitors, because then you ask anybody from that time frame, they're like, everybody else would have random outages, and we never did. We just never had issues. Everything always scaled because we had the opportunity to set infrastructure up that way early on. And now it's put us in a position where we can just develop things and add it to what we now refer to as a stack. And it just always works, plugs right in. We don't have those kind of scaling issues that other companies have. So.
Right, right. Yeah, like I said, I remember when you were in that office at the time, I was working as a courier, and I used to have runs to Columbus from where I'm at in northern Michigan. And I'd call you up, say, hey, I'm going to be in Columbus about 11. You want to go to lunch? So I'd go to lunch with you, and then I'd end up coming all the way back home that day. But then later on, we moved into the old CompuServe complex down there. I think it's still called CompuSuites, isn't it? Or I forget what happened to it. But that was the first real office down there, and we started adding people. Mackenzie came on about that time, and now we're up to, what, 4 or 5 full-time developers, plus, you know, we've got a marketing team and an in-house graphic artist, and you know, it's growing, and I think it's a great thing. So let's find out a little bit about you. I know you're into cars, specifically Trans Ams.
So. Yeah, well, I really like cars, and I love them all. I like electric cars and the Teslas that's out, and kind of seeing what's happening with that, the new Hummer coming out. And on the flip side, I also really like really old cars, like just thinking about like in 1903 when they started making cars that anybody could buy. Or I guess that would be 1914, 1915. But yeah, it's just a magical time period. I really like that part of history of, the America getting on wheels, and then the world being able to have mass transit and stuff like that. But my particular infatuation is actually from that movie, Smokin' a Bandit. So I really love Trans Ams. But I really love mechanics and the whole making things work. So obviously, like in the house, I try to fix things. If I can't, then I'll call the plumber or whatever. So that's just kind of how I am. And luckily, you know, knock on wood or knock on metal, most everything I fix, I usually don't have to call the expert.
Yeah, that's good. I've been kind of eyeing the idea of getting a Model A, just because, you know, not quite a Model T like you're talking about, but a little bit more modern car. And I watch a guy on YouTube, and he sells T-shirts that say, I am the warranty. So, you know, when you have something old like that, or even, you know, something new, you know, if you can do the work, it saves you a lot of money on top of, you know, it's very satisfying. I know you restored, what year is that, the older Trans Am you have? It's 80-something?
Well, technically it's an 81, but it's a 78 Trans Am. Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, that's a labor of love. I'm still doing things to it. The latest thing is I'm going to change the stereo out to something that looks period correct, but then I'll have Bluetooth.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, just little things like that now. It's pretty much done car now. But
yeah, I remember when you first started working on it, when I was coming down there to do lunch with you once in a while, and we'd always stop by and see your progress on that car. And last time I saw it, it was all painted and pretty much done. So awesome. You haven't seen it on the road a couple times. I don't think I got a ride in it, though.
Well, yeah, next time you're here, we'll get you a ride. I think last time you're here, even though it was painted, I had it back up on blocks because I was swapping the transmission. So that has been done. It's not very original. On the outside, it looks original, even the engine. But once you start digging into it, it's got fuel injection where it should add a carburetor. It's got a 6-speed manual from a modern car, even though it originally had a 3-speed automatic. Just that kind of stuff has all changed.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize you were doing the manual swap, but very cool. Well, Angelo is usually the one that us in support get to bug, and then he sends it on to the rest of the dev team. But you know, everything goes pretty swimmingly most of the time, so we're very thankful that you're keeping things moving. And I'm sure all the customers are thankful too, because it's pretty rare we have any sort of outages. So that's awesome. Well, let's get on to the question of the week, and this one's right up your alley as well. Like I said, since I had you on here, I wanted to throw some geeky stuff at you. But I get this question periodically in CastFeed Validator, which is a site we own. But if someone's using, you know, one of the what did you call those? I always just know it as Cloudflare, or there's another couple of them like that, but a web application firewall service. Anyway, but the question usually goes, I'm using Cloudflare. Castfeed Validator tells me that Cloudflare may cause issues with podcasting. Why is that?
So Cloudflare, Encapsula, even services like Google and Amazon offer what they call a web application firewall, or the abbreviation is WAF, W-A-F. And these things are great for dealing with like DDoS attacks or malicious traffic coming from like specific countries, or you could block user agents with them that you might see doing something malicious, or web bots. The challenge is, what these companies use very often will stop a podcast app from working. So, for example, a lot of them will present, and I think Cloudflare does this too, they'll present randomly a web page which says, click this reCAPTCHA, or please wait 30 seconds so we verify that you're a human before we continue and show you the page. That works great in a web browser, but when you're in the iOS podcast app and your feed, you just try to request a feed from a site with a WAF application that's displaying that page, the podcast app doesn't just pop up a browser with that HTML. Instead, it says, hey, this isn't XML. And it just says it can't, well, there's nothing new, or it can't pull the podcast feed at that point. And that is just one example of where some of this stuff kind of can send a podcast app down a rabbit hole of not updating for days or weeks. Whereas, you know, I'm on the web page and I see it.
Yeah. And these things are great for, you know, for what they're good for. And from what I understand, they can be set up to allow the podcast feed to pass, but it's a pretty difficult setup and there's no step-by-step guide to do that. I know there's some podcast hosting companies out there that use Cloudflare specifically, and they've got it set up to where it does work for them, but Castfeed will still detect that. And say, that's why we changed it. It used to say Cloudflare will, or this service, you know, if it was Encapsula or whatever, will cause issues. We changed it to may, because there is some exceptions.
That's not how we worded it, but yeah.
Yeah.
It was worded that services like Cloudflare are incompatible with podcasting.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And that's technically true, but yeah, Mike, you were dealing with support, and so you changed the wording. That's fine. But yeah, so any WAF is not going to be compatible with podcasting when you have it configured. And the reason is that it blocks non-web applications, which all podcast apps pretty much are non-web, or I should say web browser applications. And then it prevents a lot of the things like the reCAPTCHA messages that pop up from appearing. You know, some other things that these WAFs will do is they'll use web browser user agents to allow the traffic to come in and block all others. Some other things that, which obviously if you're coming in from an application called ITMS, it'll get blocked because it doesn't say Chrome or Firefox in the user agent. Unfortunately, you don't want to do that because ITMS is the user agent that Apple uses for the podcast directory. Let me give you another example. Even your Apache web server that you might have if you're using like an old school web server that has the application service called cPanel. If you enable the module called Mod Security in Apache, you could inadvertently start blocking some of the functions that are required for podcasting as well. Like, for example, some of the Mod Security mods that are public that experts have put together will just block head requests. And that's great for a normal web traffic website, but for a podcast website, that's a big problem because a lot of podcast apps, including Apple's, will do a head request first to see that the feed is there before it does a traditional download GET request. And obviously, if that head request fails or is blocked, it's not going to get to that next step. And then that, again, you get that experience where the podcast isn't updated in the app.
Yeah, and basically, it'll slow down or stop your podcast apps from updating. So, you know, that kind of defeats the purpose of your podcast, because that's what you want it to be able to update everywhere. And of course, you started to talk about it, I think, or if not, I will. We do have a way around it. If you absolutely have to use one of these services, our podcast mirror service does a pretty good job of getting around that. Was that what you were going to say?
Yeah, so actually, I'll say three things. First is always use the castfeedvalidator.com service. It's free. Put your podcast feed in there and hit submit. Find out if this or other things, because there's lots of other things besides just a web application firewall that can cause issues, just double check that your website is podcast compatible. And then with that, yep, we have a way of hosting your feed. It's called Podcast Mirror, but also you could use another service like FeedBurner. And the rumor is that FeedBurner is going to finally be updated. It hasn't been touched since 2008.
I personally don't recommend it yet, but who knows? They might really improve it.
Yeah. And then the other thing too is, don't host your media on your website, because we just talked about the web application firewall and just your feed, your podcast feed. It can cause even bigger issues if you're hosting your media, specifically on setting timeouts, how long connections last. If you have like a good 30-minute episode, the file size at high quality is going to be about 30 megs or larger. If someone's on a slow connection on their phone and it's going to take about a minute and a half to download, that's normally completely okay, but if the WAF at Web Application Firewall set up the closed connections after 15 seconds because they're trying to stop malicious your requests, the user's not going to be able to download it. In other cases, the Web Application Firewalls don't even allow certain content types like audio or video, because depending on how the WAF is set up, it's trying to deal with possible security issues or bandwidth issues. And large files can use a lot of bandwidth. So it's just good not to put your podcast media files on the same infrastructure that you have your website.
Yeah, that's good advice. And you do it the blueberry way. We cover most of that. So anyway, I guess we've beaten this one to death. If you have any other questions, of course, you can email me, mike@blueberry.com. If you have a question for the question of the week, same email. And of course, the best place for support for Blueberry products and services, our ticket system over at blueberry.com/support. And if you send a ticket in there, the whole team gets access to it rather than just me. And sometimes I get busy. So I'm sure you can relate, right, Angelo? You're just getting buried in email.
Yeah, I usually always have a bunch of email and I have to prioritize it based on, you know, what's real important and what's not, and then get to it over the weekend.
Yeah, it's just one of those things you never seem to catch up. All right, so we're about the end of the show here, so let's do the end announcements here. Of course, be sure to follow or subscribe to the companion show of this one, Podcast Help Desk, where I get to go a little bit deeper and geekier into the techie stuff, although we've kind of pegged the geeky meter today on this one. So maybe I'll do a lighter show this weekend for Podcast Help Desk. So anyway, and of course, you can use the promo code INSIDER for a free month of anything we do here at blueberry.com. And that'll, like I said, give you a free 30 days and check it out. And I think that's about it. Anything you want to add, Angelo, before we close this out?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, thanks for being here for sure. Todd should be back next week. He's coming back from going to his son's high school graduation. And I think he's actually traveling as we speak. So anyway, we'll be back live next week with another episode of Podcast Insider.